You're listening to the Be the Church podcast of Anderson Christian Church. Be sure to visit us online at accbethechurch.com.
As we've been talking about now, this understanding of now, that we as a body of believers, we as Anderson Christian Church, you and your families, my and my family, that we come together, I can see you all seated out there right now, and we have a purpose. It's more than this, right? It's more than just sitting in these seats and singing songs and listening to me talk. Our purpose is to get Jesus to these people that are around us, this community that he has placed us into, and the time for us to embrace that mission is right now. Now. Despite our natural inclination to hesitate in response to God's call in our lives as individuals and as the church, the time is now for obedience. So that's really what it is. We know what we're supposed to be doing, and all we're really wrestling with is whether we're going to be obedient to that call right now or continue to push it off to when we are more comfortable if we ever get around to it. And what is it that makes us hesitate? What makes us so slow to draw, to allow God to use us in this way? He has destined us to be used. Why do we hesitate? We talked about a few examples. That first week, we looked at Gideon, and what are some of the things we came away with? Some of the things that I readily admit that I fall right in there with. It's that I'm not good enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not wise enough. I'm not experienced enough. I'm not big enough. I'm not able to do those things. And so my natural inclination is to just hesitate and say, I can't. That's why I hesitate. But as we look at God's call and use of Gideon, it shows us that that excuse doesn't hold any water when it comes to allowing God to do what he has promised to do, because it's all about him and his abilities, not mine. The other thing that maybe causes us to hesitate is we look at it and we say, the task is just too large. This mission that we are supposed to be about, how can we possibly make a difference? How can I make any real difference or change in the world or in my community or in my family? What can I really contribute? Because look at this. Get Jesus to the whole world? What can I possibly do to really have any lasting impact on that type of a mission? It's just too big, and we're intimidated, and so we sit back and we wait and we hope someone else bigger comes along. When we sit there and we're just saying, what can I do? And so we naturally do nothing. But David shows us that there is no task that is too tall. There is no mission that is too big when you are dealing with the power of God working through you. And so we step faithfully out onto that battlefield, crying out to God for his will to be done through us and for glory to be brought to his kingdom through the victory that he has promised. And as we've worked through with Gideon and with David, we've begun to realize that when you're dealing with God, all we really need to bring to the table, all that's really required of us, is to bring a willing heart, right? To say, God, use me. I know I'm not good enough, smart enough, big enough, wise enough, whatever it may be. I know that this task is so much bigger than I am, but God, I'm bringing this heart that is willing, and I'm willing to do whatever it is that you ask me to do. I'm willing to go in over my head and above and beyond. I'm willing to be stretched and put in difficult circumstances. God, I am willing. Please use me as the tool in your hand to build your kingdom. That's all that God needs. That's all that's required to accomplish this mission. And what we see when we continue to look all through Scripture, not just Gideon, not just David, is that when God does big things, he doesn't choose the most qualified, he chooses the most willing. You remember those things that were said about David? And all these, his brothers were coming in and they fit the part, they look the part, but God looks at the heart of everything. And we read that passage in Acts that told us about David's heart, that he was a man with the heart after God's own heart, a heart that was willing to do all of God's will. Not just the parts that he would pick and choose, the parts that he was comfortable with, the parts that he knew he could accomplish, but was willing to do all of God's will. That's what we see in David. That's what we see that God desires from us. And when we begin to grasp this, we start going from telling God, not now, maybe later. We start to move on from that to eagerly throwing our hands up and wanting him to use us right now. God, use me. Use me to do this incredible thing. Use me for this impossible thing to be accomplished. Use me to bring glory to your name. Use me to bring my neighbors to Christ, not just the person down the street. Use me to change my community. Use me to bring you back into this country. Use me to have my family find the solid footing and ground and foundation of you and nothing else. Use me. Because I know you can. And I know you will. And I and willing. So we move on from that maybe later to eagerly wanting him to use us. And we pray, God, make us uncomfortable. We pray, God, stretch us to limits that we never knew we could go to. Lord, grow that faith within me. Strengthen it. Do your will through me, no matter what it means for me. And we've been talking about that for several months now. It's been that challenge for us to continue to pray, for me to pray, for you to pray, for your family, for your own personal life. God, do your will through me of saving this world, no matter what it means for me. No matter what I have to give up or how uncomfortable I have to get, no matter what I have to sacrifice, God, I want your will done through me. A heart after his. And today we're going to look at a sequence of events that I believe will bring us even more clarity and confidence in the now. The sequence of events will help us to understand what it is that God is capable of and what it is that God desires from us. Again, that peace that is only needed from us, that willingness, that heart that says, God, I am here, use me. And it'll bring clarity because we're always a little bit more concerned with what we can't do than what we can do. Is that maybe where you find yourself a lot of times? I know it is for me. I go through life, I wake up every day, I think about goals and objectives and retirements, I think about family, I think about all these things that I would love to do. An immediate disqualifier is, well, I can't do those things. And so I start to structure my life, I start to structure ministry, we start to structure what we do as a church based on what we can't do as opposed to what we can do, what we can contribute, and more importantly, what God can do through us. Yes, we are incredibly limited and we are incredibly weak and feeble-minded, but that doesn't matter because we serve an all-powerful, extraordinary God. Ordinary people serving an extraordinary God. And that is where we rest. That is where we find our confidence. And suddenly we find clarity that we can go forward and God can do the impossible through us. But for that to begin, we have to start being more concerned with what we can do and less concerned with what we can't do. Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44. We see where it says, Jesus sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box, for they all contributed out of their abundance. But she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on. And we tend to spend a little bit of time here once a year, especially as we approach that Thanksgiving offering, and now with all of that working in conjunction with our campaign. But this passage of Scripture contains such a powerful message for each and every one of us. Such a powerful message. And for just a moment, place yourself in the shoes of the widow. Walking into the temple that day, walking in to bring your offering, and you clutch in your hand those two small copper coins that basically amount to nothing. And you're standing in the back of this line as you see all these people approach the offering box, and they place in these large bags filled with all kinds of money that are going to make this immediate impact. And there's this big show around all of it, and there's probably this awe as these people come in and parade and go through the motions, and we sit and wonder, look at what they are donating and giving, and you stand in the back with your two coins in your hand thinking, what is this going to do? And you know, if that was me, you know what I would do? You know what I would do if I were her in that particular situation? Absolutely nothing. I wouldn't do anything. I would look and I would survey the situation. I would know what I had, what I really couldn't do in comparison to everyone else, and I would do nothing. I would give nothing. Because what good are these coins in comparison to the offerings that everyone else is bringing? What good is my offering, my sacrifice, when so many others are doing so much more? See, I would have been so overcome with the thoughts of what I couldn't do in that moment that it would paralyze me to the point of doing absolutely nothing. And the sad reality about that is that that's a situation that really plays out pretty often in today's world and in my life. Maybe the situations are different, but I continue to look around and I've become paralyzed out of the fear and the thoughts that, well, I can't do anything in comparison to everyone else, and so I'll just do nothing. And there's two ways that plays out. The first is financially, right? That does. It's relevant in the situation because of the financial giving. Now, I've been very open and honest with you guys about the journey that my wife and I went on when we first got married, as I learned essentially the importance of tithing. And that has been an area that has stretched me and grown me, as you just are forced to trust in God and the growth that occurs because of that. But still, as with financial giving, and I was talking with a couple this morning just about, I'm one of those guys that I would love to be one of those just anonymous donors, you know, that comes in and just makes incredible things happen. I would love to be able to do that. I would love to be able to go in, now we're here in the holidays, and you know, go into Walmart and just pay off people's layaway. Wouldn't it be awesome to be able to do something like that, to make such a huge impact that you know you're blessing other people and that they would be blessed because of that? Maybe it's not just that, though. Maybe it's sending people to school. How great would that be to know that there's an individual that is trying so hard, that has this goal that they want to go after, and they are working endlessly to make it happen, but they just can't make the ends meet of getting to school and getting the degree that they need for it to be recognized in that way. How great would it be to come along and just say, I'll pay for it. Wouldn't that be great? Do things even anonymously, paying off the layaway, buying people their meals, sitting down and looking across and seeing a table of people eating, and for whatever reason being moved by the Spirit to pay for their meal and just making it happen. Maybe it's with the server itself, right? And leaving that gigantic tip that leaves them just amazed at what God had done, and to be able to do it all in secret. I would love to be able to do that. But here's the reality. I look at things like that, these things that I want to do, and in my mind, I have convinced myself that because I can't do things on that grand of a scale, what I can do doesn't really matter, and so I sit and I do what? Nothing. Paralyzed by the thoughts, consumed by what I can't do instead of what I can do. And essentially, it's me standing there clutching those two small copper coins, refusing to let them go just because I can't put in a big bag. Now here's the reality though. I can't pay for someone's school. But I might be able to buy some books. I might be able to buy some supplies. I can't buy someone their whole Christmas that's on layaway, but I can still do part. Maybe it's just even packing a shoebox and dropping it off at the church to bless some kid on the other side of the world. Now I can't buy someone their whole meal at Chili's, but I can buy some guy's lunch behind me in the McDonald's drive-thru. And we see what God can do with that, what Demi just shared. Now, I can't leave a $100 tip at a restaurant, but you know, maybe a little above and beyond still goes a long way in the heart of that individual. See, I have to understand that those what I can do matters. I have to understand that while I can't come in and just do it all myself, that the little bit that I can contribute makes a lasting difference in the life of even just one. That God can take it and He can do incredible things. I have to understand that. We have to understand that. That no matter what we can bring to the table, this sacrifice that we bring, God can use it to advance His kingdom if we would just be willing and stop hesitating. In my opinion, the enemy has delighted for far too long in convincing us to only be concerned with what we can't do, keeping us blinded to what we can do. Because you can make a real difference in the lives of individuals all around you, neighbors, coworkers, friends, people in this church. You can make a difference in their lives if you would just allow God to do that through you. If you would just, whether it's financial or just your time or whatever it may be, if we would just let Him use us, true change can occur. And that happens personally, and it happens at church as well. Look, I get it. We can't all come in here on a monthly basis and give $1,000 or more to our offering. I understand that. Trust me, I understand that. But that doesn't mean that the 20 that we can, or the 50 or the 100 that we can give on a monthly basis doesn't make a difference, because it most certainly does. Think about it in the proper perspective of what those things can do to advance God's kingdom. $20, that may not sound like a whole lot, but when you get together with a youth group and suddenly now you're able to buy $4 or $5 pizzas, that is a blessing right there. Because what? You came in and said, I can't give a whole lot, but I can give this, and God is going to bless this and do something with it. And it may be at that event where pizza is served that someone finally opens their eyes to hear who Jesus is in their life. And it happened because you willingly said, I have these two coins, and you gave it. Maybe it's $50. And it goes to help pay for someone in the community for their electric bill through our benevolence fund. Maybe it's more than that. Maybe it's the $100, and you have no idea who that can really impact if you just gave what we had willingly, instead of worried and being consumed by what we can't do, allowing what we can do to be put in the hands of God and for Him to do incredible things from there with it. It's amazing to think about the possibility. It's amazing. All that difference that could be done if we would just be willing. And one of the big things that we are encouraging throughout this entirety of this campaign is not equal gifts, but equal sacrifice. Right? Not equal gifts, but equal sacrifice. We are all gifted differently, spiritually. We know that. The body is made up of all these different spiritual gifts that God pulls together for a distinct purpose and mission and that goal that lies ahead. He makes it work. Well, similarly, we're all gifted differently financially and come from different situations. And when we come together, though, with that unity of placing it all in God's hands, He pulls it together and makes incredible things happen. What is it that He wants? It's not the money you can bring to the table. It's the heart that you bring to the table. That's what God takes and does incredible things with. That's what God uses to further His kingdom. That's what He does to bless you immeasurably in ways that you will never be able to fully comprehend if we were just willing. So not equal gifts, but equal sacrifice. And think about the incredible growth that God can do in our congregation, in our family, by taking those willing hearts, those sacrificing hearts, and growing that faith within us. I've said multiple times that Thanksgiving Sunday is my absolute favorite Sunday here, because we've always done that offering, we've done the shoeboxes, and we get together for that dinner, and there is such intense joy at that dinner when we are all together. Why? Because so many of us have sacrificed and gone above and beyond. We are maybe even hurting financially in that moment because we have laid it all up there for God to use, but in that moment there is such joy because of our hearts, because we've been taught a lesson, because we are growing, because our eyes are open to what really matters instead of the temporary. And so to think of what can happen over the course of a 3-year campaign if we are all giving in that way, allowing God to stretch us, not equal gifts, but equal sacrifice. And the other thing that sticks out to me about this, the widow here in this moment, is she gave those 2 coins when she only had 2 coins. Again, you know what I maybe would have done? I would have started to negotiate with God within my mind. I would have started looking at it and saying, all right, I've got these 2 coins. I feel like I should give these 2 coins, but why don't I wait until I have 3? I'll feel a little bit more comfortable at that point. Maybe I'll wait until I have 4 or more. I'll hold on to these 2 until I'm in a better position. And again, it goes back to the whole thing, well, I want to bless people. I want to be able to do that. I want to be that anonymous guy. But I look at it and I say, well, I've only got 2 coins right now. I'll start to do that when I've got 4, when I've got 5, when I've got more, whatever it may be. And I can't continue to hesitate and wait. But bring what I have, bring what I can do, and allow God to take it from there. The second thing that sticks out to me about this woman in this situation is not only the financial lesson that I get from it, but also in my abilities and just my act of service. It's similar, but it's different, right? So I often doubt my ability and what it can do in impacting the mission. Because we might look at it and say, well, I can't really teach, I can't serve, I can't lead, I can't do the things that all these other people do. I can sit here in this seat. And so we start to say, I can't. And we base what we can contribute to the mission, we base what God can do through us in our lives and our relationships, based again on what we can't do instead of what we can do. Think about it at church. If you aren't comfortable teaching or leading or serving in those ways, you can be a friend, can't you? You can build relationships with someone. You can pray, can't you? You can take the matters of the church, the leaders, your friends, the mission that we have, you can bring that before the throne of God, can't you? You can encourage, right? Instead of always talking about and maybe judging from the backside, thinking, well, it should have been done this way, it should have gone this way, instead stepping up there and encouraging and understanding that while you may not be on the front lines, you have a purpose that you can provide in that moment, looking at what you can do instead of what you can't do. So many lessons for me in particular, of allowing God to do what He wants to do through my life, giving what I've got, not what I wish I had. This widow comes in, and she gave everything that she had. It says everything that she had to live on in that moment. What would happen in a couple weeks if we came in and gave everything that we had to live on in that moment, trusting God to do whatever He's going to do? Giving everything she had. But why? Why did she do this? And how did Jesus respond? Because I love His response. You get this sense that He like jumps up after seeing her put in those 2 coins and calls over the disciples. Guys, look at this. You've got to see this. And maybe they're excited thinking, oh, is He going to point out that guy that just came in and put in that giant thing of money? But no, Jesus points out and looks at this widow over there. Look at what she just did. She just put in those 2 coins. And maybe the disciples look at Him in confusion. Like, what are you talking about? That's not a big deal at all. But Jesus sees things differently, doesn't He? He sees things in a way that you and I will perhaps never be able to see them, because again, He doesn't look at the outward appearance. He doesn't look at the show that we're often infatuated by, but He looks right into the heart of the matter and into the heart of the individual. And what He saw in that widow in that moment made Him excited. So excited that He wanted to share in that moment with His disciples. And why? Because of the heart. because of her heart that was given to him, that was surrendered to him. Her heart that was not going to hold back, but that was completely invested in him. And it's funny that just a little bit before this situation with the widow and her offering takes place, we back up a little bit in Mark chapter 12. And in Mark chapter 12, Jesus is asked what the most important command is. And it's one that we go to a lot, because when Jesus says what's the most important command, we probably need to focus on that a little bit and make that a priority. Mark chapter 12, verses 29 through 30, Jesus said, "The most important is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength." That's what Jesus desires, right? He looks at us, His creation, His children. He looks at us still today as His church. And what does He want to see from us? He doesn't want to see this grand display of the show and the theatrics that we can put together. He doesn't care about how many Facebook posts we have or how often we keep scrolling on. He doesn't care about any of those things. He's looking directly into your heart, and He can tell right now just how genuine it is or how lost you still may be. He can tell just how in you are with Him and how willing that heart is by looking not at the outward appearance, but right at the heart. See, Jesus has this different way of seeing things. And hopefully to make my wife happy here, a couple weeks ago I referenced The Wizard of Oz. We're going to talk about The Wizard of Oz again. That's her favorite one, so maybe bringing it up twice gets me a few brownie points. I don't know. But The Wizard of Oz, okay? What is one of the coolest things about that? I remember as a kid being amazed by it. Because you watch that first part, and as a kid you're really bored by it. You know, like the black and white sepia tone component of it all. And then you're just waiting as a kid to get to where? When that door opens up into Oz, and what happens? It's color everywhere. It's alive. It's vibrant. It is full, right? And you watch that, and it's just, as a kid, you just, maybe not anymore. I mean, kids have pretty awesome stuff just in their pocket anymore. But when I was a kid, and that would come on the TV once a year, and we'd watch that, it was just so neat to watch that. And I almost feel like that's maybe how Jesus was sitting there and viewing the temple that day. Watching everyone come in their show, contributing, giving, going through the motions, and it looked so good to so many other people. But Jesus may be sitting there and just a little bit bored, because He's watching and looking at the heart of each person that comes in there. And then all of a sudden, this widow walks up. It's two small coins, and drops them in there, gives everything she's got. And it's just as if everything moves to color. And Jesus gets excited and He jumps up and He says, "Guys, you got to come here. You got to see this. You got to learn from this. Look at what this woman has just done." That's how Jesus viewed the temple that day. I think that's maybe how He views us. When she walked in there, it lit up the room for Jesus. It made it vibrant. It brought it to life. Go back a little bit further in Mark chapter 12. In Mark chapter 12, verse 17, again, Jesus is, they're trying to trap Him throughout this. And they ask Him, "What about taxes? Should we be paying taxes?" And to get to the very crux of it all, Jesus says, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And they marveled at Him. See, she came in here in this moment, and she gave to God what was God's, not the coins, but the heart. And as God watches us, as Jesus looks in on us, what He wants us to surrender is not those coins. Those may be a symptom, right? That may reflect how all in the heart is. But what He wants are hearts completely surrendered to Him. And she came in that moment, giving to God what was God's, her heart. So let's take a moment of self-reflection. What does God see when He looks at your life? What does He see when the offering plates are passed? What does He see in your thoughts? What does He see when you're at home? What does God see in your life? Is it sepia-toned or is it in full color? Because we know He's looking right in here. We may be able to fool everyone else. We may be able to fool ourselves, but we cannot fool Him. Go back to what we looked at last week. 1 Samuel 16:7. "The Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height or his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" So what does He see when He looks on your heart? When He looks on the heart, the combined heart of Anderson Christian Church, what is it that He sees? See, it's my hope that when we come next week we have this commitment Sunday. When we come and we make these commitments to God, we make these declarations to Him that, God, I know You have a plan for my life. God, I know that You have something that You want us to do as Anderson Christian Church. God, I know that there is purpose, there is mission of getting the people all around us to You, and I want to be in on that. As we make that declaration as to how all in we are, what is this room going to look like to God as He looks down and He sees those sacrifices being made? Is it going to be full of color? Is it going to be one that excites Him and makes Him jump up? Will He be calling the angels over and saying, look at this, look at what they're doing, look at how they're surrendering to Me in My ways, in My will, look at the glory that I am about to make known through them, because they have heart after mind, because they are willing to do all of My will. What will this room look like as we make that declaration? And here's what we have to avoid in that process: the show. The show that we read taking place here in Mark chapter 12, the show that did not entertain Jesus in the slightest, because it's that good outer appearance that we often all have, but it's about the heart. And you can look alive on the outside and the heart can be dead. Right before this widow comes up, before her offering, we read in Mark chapter 12, verses 38 through 40, and in His teaching, He said, Jesus' teaching, beware of the scribes, who like to walk around in long robes and like greetings in the marketplaces, and have the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feasts, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation. That's a powerful statement by Jesus. What's important? He just finished saying, right, give to God what is God's, the heart. He just said, the most important command is to love the Lord your God with all your heart. Right here He is saying, but avoid these guys that walk around and it looks great on the outside, but inside it's nothing but death. Avoid those guys. Instead, come and surrender to Him. Jesus hates the show. What does He talk to the Pharisees? He says, you guys are nothing but whitewashed tombs, right? You look great on the outside. It looks beautiful on the outside, but inside you're filled with death. I don't want that to be me. I don't want that to be us. Looking great on the outside, but dead on the inside. And it's hard because, honestly, because we're stuck only looking at the outer appearances, I think we've come to a place where we love the show. We love it. We love the show. We're infatuated with the show. Listen to one of the disciples here. Right after then the widow and her offering in Mark chapter 13, it says, as He came out of the temple, one of His disciples said to Him, look, teacher, what wonderful stones and what wonderful buildings. And Jesus said to him, do you see these great buildings? There will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. We love the show. We just like this disciple look up and we are, wow, look at how cool this is. This church has an escalator in it. Look at this great show. Look at what it is that they can do. Look at how many people here. Look at these beautiful buildings. Look at these awesome programs. We love the show. And we tend to lose and not see what the heart is. Now look, in a lot of these places that have all those things, great things are being done, right? The work of the Lord is being accomplished and He is receiving all kinds of glory and God loves it. But what really excites Him? Does God get really excited when we build a church building that has an escalator in it? Or does He get more excited when one more person walks up with a heart that is willing to give everything, just like this widow? What gets Him out of His seat? What gets Him pumped? Now the reason that that's good is because what gets Him excited, it can be done anywhere, right? It can be done in a church of 20,000 and it can be done in a church of 100 because it's a heart matter. And I would love to be the type of a church of 100 or so, that gets God excited because of the hearts that are completely surrendered to Him. God doesn't get excited when we come in and we sing beautiful and professional songs and everything looks good. God gets excited when we cry out to Him in worship through our hearts. God doesn't get excited when we pray those long prayers that are very eloquent and makes other people think, wow, that was really worded so well. God gets excited when simply our heart cries out to Him and it says, God, I am willing, use me. God doesn't get excited when we continue to hesitate and tell Him maybe later when I'm a little bit more comfortable, but God gets excited when we say, right now, Lord, use me. And next week we have an opportunity to be able to make that type of a declaration to Him. Next week is our Commitment Sunday. When you leave here in just a little bit, you're going to receive a commitment card.
Thank you for listening to the ACC Be the Church podcast. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and check us out on our website at accbethechurch.com.